Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Good afternoon to you, Celine Duguza Ngasa.
Yes, good afternoon to you, sir, as well.
Are you well, sir?
I'm good, sir, and how are you?
Very well. Thank you so much for joining us. And I appreciate very much that you made time to speak to us here on the Adventist World Radio. We're going to be seeing if we can help us dispel or busting some divorce law myths. In South Africa, misconceptions about the legalities of divorce can cause confusion and stress, especially for individuals already navigating the difficult path of ending a marriage. Now, understanding the truth behind common divorce myths can help people manage their expectations and make informed decisions. So help us debunk some of the most prevalent myths surrounding divorce in South African law. Now, Kuza, please address the belief that you can't get a divorce unless your spouse agrees to it. Is this true or is this false? What is a no-fault divorce system? And what does it mean for a spouse who wants to divorce but whose partner refuses?
First of all, sir, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to come or to be invited in this platform to come and share my insight on some legal aspects.
Mm.
Yeah, the issue of a no-fault divorce, it's based on the fact that the party who seeks to divorce the other party needs not to necessarily prove that the other party has committed maybe misconduct or whatever the case may be.
Mm.
But if the party, if the party who seeks to divorce the other party, maybe they feel like they no longer want to continue the marriage relationship, they need not to prove that the other party is at fault. So that's what essentially the no-fault divorce means. So you need not to prove that the other party is at fault, but you just want to divorce from this other, from this party. I don't know if I'm making sense, but it's based on that. Yeah. Mm.
So are you saying that the no fault means that they don't have to prove if there's any fault or misconduct? They can just divorce because they want to?
Yeah, because they want to. Just to make an example about this, let's say you no longer love the other party. Then the issue is not the other party. The issue is yourself, that you no longer want to continue in this love relationship for whatever reasons, but not based on the faults of the other party. So you see, I think it's self-explanatory to say that it's a no-fault divorce. So there's no such thing as a person cannot get divorced because the other party does not want to consent. Remember, the issue of marriage is a contract between the two parties. So now, if one party no longer wants to continue with the marriage relationship, it doesn't matter what is the reason for that. But if the partner now feels like, okay, I no longer want to continue this relationship, then divorce may be granted or is always granted on that ground alone.
Ooh.
because to say that, because one of the grounds for divorce is to say that there's no longer love and affection between the parties. So if one party no longer loves the other party, then that alone is a ground for divorce.
Mm.
I no longer find you attractive. There's no love and affection. Obviously, in a marriage relationship, there are also conjugal rights, meaning parties have to be intimate. So once there's no intimacy, whatever the case may be, then that alone is a ground for divorce. So it's a myth to say that now a party cannot get divorced if the other party does not consent to divorce. Even if you don't want to divorce, but if the other party wants to divorce you, then divorce will be granted. Because, as I've said earlier on, that if one person is missing, because it takes two for a tango. Now, if one is missing, then there's no point in retaining the marriage relationship.
Okay. Now, another belief is that proving that a spouse was unfaithful guarantees a better settlement or forfeiture of assets. Please explain how the court actually views and handles a spouse's misconduct.
Okay. Previously, it was Previously it was the case, but now the courts developed the law gradually, and various judgments were written by the courts. Now the courts found out that one party misbehaves, mm-hmm. whatever the case may be, mm-hmm. then it is the ground for divorce, to say that it just shows that there is an irretrievable breakdown of the divorce. For example, if one party cheats on the other party,
mm-hmm.
then it usually gave the other party a better settlement. But now the court says that no, actually, this is the ground for divorce. Once you allow another person to enter in between, if you allow a third party into the marriage relationship, then mm-hmm. that is the ground for divorce. So it does not guarantee you a better settlement. It just shows that now there's no longer a marriage relationship between the two of you. So it does not guarantee you a better settlement. What guarantees you a better settlement
mm-hmm.
is a situation whereby, let's say, we were married in community of property, and then let's say I retire first, then I dissipate all the funds, I don't give you anything, then you continue with the marriage relationship, then later on you want to divorce, then I come and I say, okay, I also want to share from your pensions or mm-hmm. whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. Then I may raise and say, no, actually you did get your monies earlier on and I did not benefit. So that is what courts normally consider when it comes to misconduct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially if it has financial implications, to say that I benefited or I once received some monies and I did not share them into the joint estate.
Mm-hmm.
Now when the time for divorce comes, now the court will look at that or will consider that in terms of Section 9 of the Divorce Act,
mm-hmm.
which deals with the forfeiture of benefits forfeiture of matrimonial benefits. So the courts now, they consider it's the substantial misconduct by the other party,
mm-hmm.
Any other factor, and also whether or not there'll be an undue benefit
mm-hmm.
by the other party. So that's what the court considers. But now, generally, misconduct by the other party does not guarantee you better settlement unless it has financial implications.
Okay.
As I've explained earlier.
Wow. All right. There are people who believe that spousal maintenance is an automatic entitlement. Do clarify the clean break principle in South Africa particularly, and the court's discretionary approach towards awarding maintenance.
Okay. Spousal maintenance is not an automatic right. You have to prove that you actually deserve that right in law.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if I was married to this lady and then maybe we had an estate worth around 60 million, let me give an example. Then I was maintaining this lady for 20 years, maybe giving her an allowance of 500,000 rands. Then the law does allow that maintenance to continue maybe for 2 years, or maybe after the other party has remarried.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it happens. It's not an automatic right. We have to prove that you are entitled to that right, and we have to prove that you will be severely prejudiced if you are not given that spousal maintenance. So for not all the parties who divorce get spousal maintenance. It is based on the means test.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you've got to come and bring receipts within the courts and say, because of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I deserve spousal maintenance. It's not that you're going to automatically deserve it.
No, that's not the case. We have to prove that you actually deserve it. And it's not an endless right. It is time limit. For example, if you remarry, then it automatically ends in terms of the law.
Okay.
Or maybe it can be, also it can be given a time frame to say, okay, we are going to maintain this person for a period of maybe 2 years, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Then after that, the law deems that now this person was maintained will have figured other means now to leave. If you have maintained her maybe for 2 years, then after that, the law says, okay, you are fine now. You should have considered other means of leaving now. Okay. And, okay, or, yeah. And yeah, and then if you remarry,
And if after 2 years, you come back to the court and say, well, the economy is hard. I've really been trying to look for employment and other means. But please, can this spouse continue for another 3 years until I get something? Do you think that the court will grant that?
No, it can't grant that because the courts are also guided by the law. So if the law says that maybe you will be maintained for 2 years, then after 2 years, as I've said earlier on, that you should have, or you should have figured other means of surviving, or maybe you remarry. Then coming to the question of the clean break principle. Mm-hmm. This principle previously. Pensions did not form part of a joint estate. Okay. So now this clean break principle was introduced. Now if you are divorcing, even your pensions will be divided equally. If both parties are employed, then each party must benefit from the other party's 50% of their pension interest. So that is the clean break principle. That is in terms of Section 7 of the Divorce Act. Yeah, and I think it's Section 37D of the Pension Funds Act. Yeah, so now, but you don't automatically get it. You must, in the divorce papers, you must specifically state that you want to benefit from the, from your spouse's pension interest. Then you will get that right or that benefit as well. So if one party is employed and then the other party is not employed, the one who is not employed will benefit. Or will be the only one to benefit from the pension interest. But if you're both employed, then you're going to both benefit from the other party's respective pension interest. So that's what essentially the clean break principle entails.
I see. Now, is it true that mothers always get primary care of the child or children? What factors do courts consider when deciding on care and contact arrangements?
It's not an automatic right that mothers always get the custody of the children. I think once had this discussion in one of the discussions that we had. I'll touch on that as well. During divorce proceedings, if there is a dispute over custody, then there will be a female advocate who will be involved, and there will be some investigations working in collaboration with the social workers. So also there will be some interviews which will be conducted so that the children can be heard as well as to what their wishes are pertaining to the issue of primary residence and so on and so forth. So the family advocate in compiling their reports, they will also consider what the children's wishes are or were during their interviews with the children. So it's not the case that mothers will automatically get the right to custody over the children. Sometimes even men do get that right, but it's rare that men fight over custody for children. You see, in most divorce cases that I've handled, most men, they just say, no, I just want just a right to reasonable contact and access, but the mother must retain the children. Because I think it follows naturally that kids must remain with their mothers. Then the father must just be there in the decision making, maybe pertaining to the schools and whatever the case may be. But generally, it's the mothers who get that right from, okay, maybe by consent, and then also, even if such is an issue in dispute, maybe courts normally award mothers, but they do award fathers under exceptional circumstances.
But
it's not an automatic right. It depends on various situations. If the mother is not fit to have custody over the children, then the court will award the father. But generally, even fathers, they don't want to pursue that route because they know that it follows naturally that it's the mothers who have that capability or ability to raise children.
Now you spoke about the children's views being taken into account when custody is discussed and, during a divorce. Now, how does this evolve as the child gets older?
Yeah, as the child gets older now, once they reach 18 years, now the law deems that they are able to make their own choices and decisions. Now, it can change once they reach the age of majority. But if they are still underage and then custody was awarded to the mother, for example, then it will remain like that. So, because in terms of the law, if you are underage, you are deemed that you can't make your own decisions. But once you reach 18 years, which is the age of majority here in South Africa, then you can say, no, I want to do this now. The law allows you to do whatever because you're an adult.
Now, in terms of, these two parties that are divorcing, does it go without saying that they both will be entitled to each other's pensions or depends on the higher pension that will be splitted among the two?
Yeah. You see, if you are married in community of property, then both pensions must be divided.
Mm-hmm.
And each party must benefit from the other party's pension interest.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it doesn't matter it doesn't matter who has the bigger pensions or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it follows automatically that both parties must benefit, unless maybe you, because most marriages, especially marriages in community properties, they are dissolved by way of a settlement. You see? Yeah, but unless now, you know, settlement, you agree that, no, I don't want your pensions, but you can have mine, things like that, based on certain considerations, maybe, okay, I'll give you my pensions because you still need to take care of the children as well, something like that, then you can take my pension, then I won't take from yours.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to be written down. But if there's no agreement or whatever the case may be, then now they have to be split between the two parties.
Mm. So what you're saying is that, for instance, if these two, the one has the pension and the one is maybe does not work or for whatever reason does not have the pension, and then the one says, well, I'm not interested in your pensions or anything. We'll just go our separate. I just want to move away from this thing. Can the law then force and say, no, even if you don't want and you want to walk away, the law says you must share 50-50. Will the law force them to share 50?
No. It won't. Because if they settle the divorce in that manner to say, no, I don't want anything, I just want out, then the law does not hinder the other person from doing that because it's based on settlement. Some people just want to get out. They don't want anything. So the law allows that. But if there's a dispute now regarding the division of the joint estate, now it's either you will go to court or you must reach an agreement. So if you reach an agreement, it's a give and take kind of thing because it doesn't necessarily mean that everything will be divided equally because there are a lot of considerations.
Yes,
maybe there are kids. So I can't take the house. One must take the house and then the other must get out of the house. But, since I'm taking the house, give me your pension, then I won't take my pension. Things like that. So it's a give and take situation, kind of situation.
I see. It's not a cut and dry, straightforward that, once we divorce, we share 50-50. No. Things will be, people will sit down, the court will say, okay, what's the settlement? And it will go according to the agreement.
Yeah, it will go according to the agreement. But if you don't want to agree on anything, you will go to court and then the court will make an order that everything must be divided equally. So that is not a best way to go. It's better you settle and then in your settlement you must know that you must understand that that is a give and take kind of situation.
Man, Guza, I think our time is gone. Thank you so much for joining us. But lovely to actually just look at some of these myths and actually dispel them at once. Thank you so much for helping with that this afternoon. Thank you so much. Blessings to you.
You're always welcome, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.